pressure is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
CFRC from Kingston, Ontario. Your volunteer program, campus and community radio at 101.9 FM and on the web at cfrc.ca.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, September 26th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, Wanalaiwer at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering some exciting news for Swifties in Kingston leading up to her album drop next week, Indigenous-led actions against Bill 5 coming up in Kingston this weekend, the Kingston chapter of the Draw the Line protest, which took place last weekend, and a few updates from last week's City Council meeting. Downtown Kingston is hoping to shake off the end of summer blues with a full week of Taylor Swift-themed events. Starting today to October 2nd, shops, restaurants, and venues will transform into a celebration of all things Taylor with Life of a Swiftie, a new event series timed with the release of her album, Life of a Showgirl, on October 3rd. I spoke with Nayeli Salazar with the Downtown Kingston BIA, who spearheaded this event and had her own journey stepping into the life of a Swiftie while planning the celebration. Most important question right off the top, are you a Swiftie?
No, you know what? I am not a Swiftie. But I think that I am just getting started. I think that after this, the whole planning of this event, I think that I have been listening to her like a lot. So probably I will become, yeah, definitely.
What began as a single listening party quickly grew into a downtown-wide celebration. What inspired downtown Kingston to, you know, get in on the celebration? What's the story there?
Yes, well, it's funny because we decided to create the Life of a Swiftie, that's the name of the event, because we know that there are a lot of, and there are so many Swifties right here in Kingston, and we wanted to give them unique experiences with her music in the heart of all of this. And we know what is the impact of Taylor Swift in the music industry, but also in practically in every single industry that is involved with something about her music or herself. I think that everything it is, or it will be so successful. So that's why we decided just to do this. And actually, the original plan was just to have a listening party. And we reached out to AG99. We know that it is the Kingston's Swiftie store, and they immediately they say yes, and then from there the idea continued to grow, and they are partnering with Leilo Cafe to make this event even more special. They have like right now they have a Neighbor and a Polaroid photo booth, a sparkly themed drink, and even they have a drag queen who will be hosting the event. And after that, I was just thinking, it was like, I realized, like, why stop here? You know, like, I think that we have just to do something else. And from there, I was just reaching out a couple members here in downtown Kingston, like, oh, would you like to do something else? Like, would you like to join to this experience? And it was so cool because everybody was immediately was a yes. Like a yes, what do you need? What is your vision for this? And yeah, it was so cool just to see everybody just, they did the research about the Taylor's albums, about the colors, about a lot of things that right now, that's why we have a lot of experiences across the downtown. So that's why we decided to do this.
As Salazar explained, local businesses were quick to rally behind the idea. The lineup now includes themed fitness classes, trivia nights, karaoke, treats, craft workshops, and more.
So now the event has grown into a full celebration of Swifty life. There is a drag queen brunch with Cesar Company, intro to pole classes at Pole Fitness Kingston that are completely free. They have still a couple spots. Yoga classes at Morro Yoga, just with Taylor Swift songs. We have as well crafts, bracelets, bar, tote bag decoration, even Tommy's and Something in the Water. They are hosting a trivia night. So practically we have something for everybody. And I was, as I was mentioning, like even I think that the restaurants, they got so creative because they researched, as I said, Taylor's albums, colors and lyrics just to come up with themed drinks and pastries. So for example, Mio Gelato, they created a brand new gelato inspired by her favorite candy. So that was totally a next level with some members because they were like so into this. And yeah, we are so excited.
The excitement from the downtown Kingston team and businesses has been contagious, with events seeing an overwhelming response.
We have a couple of our member staff who are Swiftie. So immediately when I just say like we are doing this, like two of them, they were like, "Whoa, what? You are doing this? That's amazing!" And what else? So I had just to chat with them about like what would you like to see in this. So they were just sharing a couple ideas as well. I was like, "Okay, curious." So because as I said, I am not a Swiftie, or I was not. I think that probably right now it is changing. But I think that when I say that here, immediately for those people, they were like, "Oh, wow, this is so cool." And then the rest, they said like, "That was so intelligent just to have these kind of experiences in downtown." Like, people are so happy. Even the members, they have sent some emails saying like, "Wow, people, they are really excited about this." Some of the events, they are completely booked. So everybody's happy.
Yeah, and I have a feeling I know the answer because you kind of got into it there, but what's been the response so far?
Yeah, like I said, like a couple of the experiences that you have to book your class or whatever, they are booked. And even, for example, I was talking to Pole Fitness this morning, and she said, I think that I will open more classes because right now it is completely booked and I am considering opening more. So I think that it is pretty good. Like the restaurants and who it is making pastries as well, they are so excited just to start this week. And yeah, I hope that everybody is still so excited about this week.
Salazar also shared why she thinks Taylor Swift in particular has sparked such a movement. Why do you think that she's had such an impact?
Well, you know what? I think I decided just to start with this idea because I was scrolling on TikTok. We started our own TikTok two months ago. And obviously, I am just spending a lot of time right now on that platform. And I realized that the impact that she has in everything, as I mentioned in the beginning, it is like insane, but at the same time, impressive. You know, like she right now, even that she just she just posted that she's playing like a kind of film movie like a couple days ago. Like boom, again, the whole TikTok was so insane about that, and people they are so excited, and that's why I think that she has a cool story. I mean, like a sad story in the beginning of her career, and everybody feels that it is part of her friends group, you know, like they are feeling that they, oh, I saw her when she was suffering about this love. And then like the whole history, I think that it is helping the whole boom right now, that because she's like a cool musician, she got just engaged. So the whole thing is that right now it is happening to her. Like the Swift is, they are so happy for her. So I think that's why that's right now it is a boom, that they want to see her just to be happy. I think so.
For Salazar, the events aren't just about celebrating Swift's music, but also showcasing what Kingston's downtown has to offer.
We are trying just to bring more people here to downtown and just make sure that people or everybody knows that we have a lot of things to do here in downtown. And yeah, I think that that's part of that, the whole experience.
Once again, Life of a Swiftie kicks off today and runs until October 2nd. Full details and tickets are available at downtownkingston.ca. Last night, Indigenous land protectors from across the Treaty 9 region in Northern Ontario arrived in Kingston to join local organizers and community members in raising awareness about Ontario's recently passed Bill 5, the Protecting Ontario by Unleashing Our Economy Act. Community members Mara Shaw and Kristen Lowitz spoke with CFRC to explain what motivated them to arrange this visit.
Ontario Bill 5 came, was passed this summer, early this summer, just as we were all going on vacation. And Kristen will tell you a little bit It's a real affront to not only Indigenous rights, which is very serious, but also all of our environmental regulations that we've been working on building in a reasonable way for years. And also the kind of the democratic process. So we can get into that. But one of the, so we got a whole bunch of people, just people from Kingston together to talk about this and talk about what does this matter to us and what are we going to do about it? And everybody thought, man, we've never seen something like Ontario Bill 5 before. It is really a big deal. And the first place, or one of the first places it affects, is Northern Ontario, where the Ring of Fire is. It's Treaty 9 land. So we talked about how do we, you know, can we connect with those, the people up there? And there's a group of pro bono lawyers that represent them that we knew. So we made contact, and in Kingston, we raised some money to be able to bring them down here for a visit. And then for the next 3 months, we've been working on working out that visit. And they'll be here Thursday through Tuesday, meeting with people, giving talks. And we have two big events that we can talk about today that everybody here is invited to. And we really hope to pack the halls because we've got 12 people coming down from Northern Ontario, and the way we can show them respect and learn from them what is happening on their land is to fill the Spire and the Isabel Bader on Sunday and Monday.
I mean, we've talked a lot about this, and I think what we heard from those folks and people here in Kingston in the room we gathered was just really about forming relationships, right? And how do we create connections and how do we create networks to support one another, right? And how do we enhance solidarity? And I think as, you know, folks in the North that are kind of on the front lines of this, we identified, you know, I think for people here, something we could do is terms of, you know, trying to provide a bit of a support network if they want to get their story out. And they've identified that they want to do that and want to share this. So that's essentially what we're trying to do. And I think one of the biggest things we can try and do as hosts for these guests that are visiting from Treaty 9 is to listen, learn, you know, bring questions, discuss, connect. And they're traveling here at their own expense, their own time to do this, right? So, yeah, I hope that we can get a good showing out of these activities.
Provincial Bill 5, or the Protect Ontario by Unleashing Our Economy Act, was proposed with the promise of speeding up infrastructure and resource extraction projects. Specific changes include replacing the Endangered Species Act and enabling the creation of special economic zones, which would exempt trusted proponents from complying with provincial regulations. The mineral-rich lands located in Treaty 9 territory, known as the Ring of Fire, have been specifically singled out as an area of major interest for the province and an area of major concern for those opposed to the bill. A host of environmental groups, Indigenous communities and organizations, and even municipalities have spoken out against the bill. Kingston City Council unanimously voted to formally oppose the bill in the spring. Lowett and Shaw spoke to what's at stake.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot at stake, right? So part of that is about Bill 5 and what is Bill 5 about? Mara spoke a little bit to that. It was passed in June, despite a lot of opposition among not only, you know, First Nations, but also municipalities. The city of Kingston has, you know, said we don't support Bill 5. There's a whole set of schedules that goes with that bill that essentially all are meant to speed up infrastructure development and resource development and make that easier. And one of the pieces of that bill that I think is the most concerning is around the creation of these special economic zones, which means if you are designated a trusted proponent in one of these special economic zones, then existing regulations provincially, municipal bylaws do not apply, right? So all those kind of safeguards, statutory protections we have for environment, human health, occupational health, labor, all those things are potentially out the window in these special economic zones. The Ring of Fire has been identified as an area that's really of interest to our current government as one of these zones. And as I think, as you'll hear from the folks that are visiting, they're concerned. This is their lives and their livelihoods and their communities that are directly affected by this. And as someone who's, you know, I'm not Indigenous myself, but want to try and, you know, be a supportive kind of ally and help kind of connect their stories there in the North with what folks might do elsewhere in Ontario and across the province to raise awareness about Bill 5 and some of the environmental justices that are so closely linked to the potential implementation of this bill.
And I just add that but these special economic zones can be created anywhere. So anywhere that the government decides they need a new landfill or a new mine, nuclear power plant, whatever. It can be on the shores of Lake Ontario. It could be at your family cottage. It's like, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. That's what the bill allows. And so we need to be really concerned about that too, because there's minerals all across Ontario. So it, you know, it just could be coming to a neighborhood near you. It's not just a distant thing. If I might, I would just like to add, we understand we need critical minerals. There's no question that Ontario's economy needs to continue, especially in the face of so many bizarre tariff threats and other economic threats. It's just that there's no reason to completely wipe out the regulations, the public input, the municipal bylaws and official plans. All of that is out the window with Bill 5. And what needs to happen is, like, we can still mine and still whatever, do whatever needs to be done economically while still respecting treaty rights and, you know, the protection of our one and only earth, the biggest peatland in Canada, and, you know, all of these important things that are really at risk.
Kingston's local Indigenous communities have also been organizing this event and welcomed our guests this morning.
In some of the initial community conversations we had here, we met with some of the members of the urban local Indigenous community and tried to take guidance as much as we could from them in terms of, you know, what we're doing and how we want to welcome these guests here from Treaty 9. So there is a welcome ceremony like on Friday morning that local Indigenous folks here are hosting to welcome the guests from Treaty 9. Natasha Darling is helping us to organize our community paddle on Saturday morning. It's full, but it's going to be an amazing event. And she has a paddleboard company that is about connecting youth to Mohawk culture on the water. There's meetings in Tiahtanaga. So hopefully those relationships and those connections will continue to be strengthened.
Shaw and Lowett dove into the events in store in the next few days, including a community paddle, a concert, and a panel discussion.
Thursday night, there's a community paddle that's happening at Lower Brewers Locks. That is already fully registered, unfortunately, but we're going to be paddling on Saturday morning. And then Saturday afternoon, they have a variety of activities that they're doing. Sunday morning, they're speaking at the Unitarian Fellowship. And then on Sunday evening is the first event where we really hope the public is going to come out. It's a pay what you can concert at the Spire, and it includes three musicians, Cacao, Sarah Harmer, and Ramon Catacquapit, and all of them are giving of their time to support this event. We really want to pack the Spire because they're also going to be speaking. We're also going to be hearing from their pro bono lawyers about, like, the legal. We're in Kingston, right? So there's a lot of intellectual people who really want to know the details of the law. So they're going to be speaking briefly, showing a short film about drone footage taken from that of the Treaty 9 lands and hearing from people. That's at the Spire on Sunday, September 28th. And as I said, it's pay what you can. And that's at 7 p.m. And then on Monday, we've booked the Isabel Vader for them to have a forum for Indigenous perspectives on Bill 5. And that's going to be a public lecture and time for discussion. So very intimate. Afterwards is going to be a reception so that people can really form those relationships that Kristen was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the concert on Sunday, pay what you can. And I'd also just mention that all the proceeds from that, whether, you know, however much you can contribute, go directly to the Indigenous Land Protectors that are going to be there at that event.
As for what's next, Shaw hopes these events will encourage Kingstonians and help them know how to continue to get involved in the fight against Bill 5.
The people that are coming, they're far away geographically, but they're close in spirit and in purpose, right? We all have a vision of an Ontario that is at least maintained for our grandchildren, right? And so some kind of personal connection and relationship, but also a full understanding of Ontario Bill 5. It's very complex. There's, you know, there's a lot to it, and yet it's simple in its impact, right? So just a good understanding of what Bill 5 is. And then we're going to leave people with what are the next steps? What can they do next? How can they be involved? We've got a really creative way for making that happen. So we're really hoping people come out to the concert and to the talk and learn more and continue to connect.
Yeah, I think it's a key opportunity to learn. And also, I mean, I teach a lot of first-year environmental studies students at Queen's, right? And in youth, the students, like, they really want, I mean, they're concerned about all these things we're talking about, right? About the environmental problems, climate crisis, Indigenous, right? So, you know, I also often think about, like, what's the hope, right? And I don't mean, like, kind of hope naively, but hope as in, like, hope that's really fostered and driven by action and relationships. And so I think this is also a really important opportunity for young folks and also the broader Kingston community, if they're so inspired, to say, okay, this is something that is affecting me here that could affect my community that is happening within my own province where I can, there's a network of folks and I can get engaged and contribute if they so wish.
We're not an organization. We're just concerned citizens. There are other organizations that are taking the lead on this. Ontario Nature is very involved. I'm very concerned and taking a whole bunch of different steps.
Once again, that was community members Mara Shaw and Kristen Lowett, who have had a hand in organizing a visit from Treaty 9 community members and youth this weekend to educate and advocate against Provincial Bill 5. Hundreds of Kingstonians came together on Saturday, rallying behind a host of causes as part of the nationwide Draw the Line protests. The action brought together movements for climate justice, migrant justice, Indigenous rights, economic justice, and anti-war, all under the banner Parade for People, for Peace, for the Planet.
Draw the line!
The event aimed to send a message to the Carney government to take action on these issues. The Kingston chapter showed up in full force with giant signs, attendees in full costume, including a fossil fuel Grim Reaper, and stilt walkers parading through the streets. Organizers included 350 Kingston and Seniors for Climate Action Now, among others. Organizers Chris Goosen with 350 Kingston and Kathleen O'Hara with Seniors for Climate Action Now spoke with CFRC at the march.
Well, it's really a historic mobilization. Often you see days of action responding to climate events or responding to violence that's happening in Gaza right now. But you don't often see cross-movement mobilization. And that's what's really unique about Draw the Line, is it's bringing together different movements, the peace and anti-war movement, the climate movement, economic justice, migrant rights. And it's saying that enough is enough. So, yeah, it's great to see such an amazing turnout here in Kingston.
What has been amazing about this whole action here in Kingston and across the country is that groups that usually don't even know the other exists are together. It's such a wonderful embracing of all the issues. And so there have been people here I've never seen before, and I'm usually at events around Kingston, too many, but new people are coming in. Again, it's because people are realizing that more has to be done, and we're running out of time with the climate, with fascism rising.
Protesters gathered in Victoria Park before parading through Queen's campus area and the downtown core to McBurney Park. Among the crowd were many Queen's University students, including Catherine Park, Ava Galloway, and Kylie Ann Horning, who shared what brought them out.
As an environmental science, like, adjacent student, it's really important to me to rally together and kind of be with people who have like-minded ideas as you, because it can feel really isolating to be on the side of climate justice and everything, so it's good to be with people who have the same ideas.
Absolutely. A lot of our classes in environmental science do have a bit of a doomsday outlook on things, just even the science supporting all of that we study. And so being part of something that's hopefully looking to create an impact, even if it's just on a small scale in our town, but these protests are happening across the country, so hopefully it is the beginning of something larger.
Yeah, I think kind of same for me. It's really nice to see the whole community get together to stand for what they believe in and all that. But yeah, protests are sort of new to me, so it's exciting to be here and just get to experience it.
I feel like you guys are environmental science students. I see your Save the Planet signs, but there's a lot of different causes all converging here.
I'd say a lot of these problems are interconnected with each other, especially people don't really realize that, like, climate justice is connected to class issues, connected to social justice issues, connected to all of it. So I think all of these causes put together kind of all, they all speak to each other.
I think what I really liked about this too was just the fact that it's like the people's protest was kind of the main name put out there, which it's not necessarily for, like, everyone's here for different things, but it's all for the people, and like that we're all here together, and maybe some people are emphasizing like different aspects of it, but at the end of the day, it's for people on the planet.
More Queen's students and various faculties, Alexandra Lipiez, Jill Snyder, and Lainey Sherville, shared similar feelings.
What made you guys go, we have to get out and get involved in this?
Because, like, why the hell not? What else are we going to do with our time? I mean, like, it's a beautiful day outside, and it's something that we're all passionate about, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it in one of my lectures. One of my professors was talking about it a week ago, and I just thought, what else am I going to do with a Saturday afternoon? Might as well get out and have my voice be heard, and I knew it would be a good cause.
Yeah, I'm just excited to be out here with everyone, all working towards the same causes. And it is a great day out, so it should be fun.
Yeah, and I did think it was interesting that there were so many causes all wrapped up in this. Yeah. Why do you guys think that was important, or why do you think that choice was made?
They're all related to each other if you think about it, especially when you think of, like, Greta Thunberg and her cause with how climate change also goes with, like, Palestine and the war effort. It's all related somehow. You just have to, like, look into deeper than, like, the surface level of things, so, yeah.
And I think us all protesting different things, too, has also been great for me to educate myself, because all of a sudden I'm learning so many things from new people talking about what they're here for, so I found that really great.
Community members Lucy Aaron and Debbie Rudin also shared what brought them out.
I was just really pleased to hear about so many groups joining together on kind of common ground and taking action.
Well, and I agree. You know, the climate is smack dab in our faces. We all know what's happening. Are we making the right decisions, though? You know, are we coming to the right conclusions? It appears that a lot of politicians haven't got the message. And so we need to be vocal. you know, there's a lot at stake. We are enjoying life at this time, but what's going to happen 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, if climate change, you know, if we don't address the issues? So yeah, I would come every Saturday or every if it could make a difference.
I think it's so easy to feel like not quite the only one, but that there aren't the minority at least, and it feels like the big parties just don't care about the bigger picture, the bigger picture issues, like you were saying, Debbie, and it feels quite hopeful having all these people working together.
Community members also highlighted the diversity of the crowd. As the crowd merged, community member Julia Allen noted the turnout from every generation.
Just saying how inspiring it is to see so many people from like different age demographics here, like just walking in front of us, kid probably younger than 5, and Sylvana, 76. Which is just, it's nice, it's hopeful, it's inspiring to see.
This was a common sentiment heard from attendees of all ages.
I was actually really surprised at the turnout of people of an older generation. I was expecting a lot of students for this, but it's really great to see that there is still care being put forth by some of the older generations who are wanting to make that change for our future and future generations as well.
Various ages. There are more young people here than I thought. I mean, we weren't sure how many young people would show up because most of us are seniors. So the number of young people has been really, really heartening.
It's amazing. I just think it's so special that we still have the older generation caring about the world, that our climate is really important.
Yeah, and that our future generation may be in good hands too, so.
The day ended at Skeleton Park Neighborhood Block Party with a rally and was punctuated with an Indigenous drumming circle. However, the protest was not without friction. Organizers and attendees reported that a car drove through part of the parade, narrowly missing participants. The incident has been reported to Kingston Police. A small group of counter-protesters, mainly opposing the pro-Palestine contingent, also appeared at McBurney Park. Goosen noted that this was not just meant to be a one-time demonstration, but a long-term alliance between advocates of different causes.
We're building a coast-to-coast alliance with Draw the Line, not just to build a mobilization, like I said, but to build a long-term alliance to ensure that Prime Minister Carney chooses the right path.
We are unstoppable.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, September 26th. We are going to see more rain in the forecast with a daytime high of 22 degrees. And then Saturday, September 27th, the Queen's football game may be marred by a little bit of precipitation, but it could be finished by the time the game kicks off at 3 p.m., so we shall see. And then rounding into the end of this week, Sunday, September 28th, going to be a beautiful, sunshiny day here in the city of Kingston with a high of 21 degrees. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborn is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Johnson Street at Victoria is closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. King Street, Queen to Frontenac parking lot entrance is closed beginning September 24th to accommodate construction-related activity. Kings Court Avenue, concession to First, is closed until October 10th for a gas main installation. Lincoln Drive at Bay Ridge is closed until October 10th for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Macaulay Street, Daly to Rideau Heights Community Center, is closed September 24th from 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the Impact Church Back to School Bash. Ontario Street, Brock to Clarence, is closed September 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the ACFAMI Franco-Ontarian Day event. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, is closed until October 24th for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Cattle Rockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. John Marks Avenue at Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper. Expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Trudell Road, development to Danbury. Expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction. Construction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. At last week's city council meeting, councillors were briefed on the next steps for the highly discussed former Davis Tannery lands. In late July, the Ontario Land Tribunal ruled that developer Jay Patry could proceed with a mixed-use development on the land expected to include about 1,600 residential units, including 100 affordable units within walking distance of the downtown core. The development was turned down by council in 2022, motivating the appeal to the OLT, and has been highly contested by environmental advocates like No Clear Cuts Kingston. The 13-hectare property is highly contaminated by smelting and tanning operations, home to a provincially significant wetland, and the redevelopment would entail clear-cutting almost 2,000 trees and removing 400,000 tons of contaminated soil. With the OLT decision, the planning process that has been on halt for the past 2 years will recommence with the submission by the developer of a draft plan of the subdivision. James Barr, manager of development approvals with the city, explained what comes next for council.
So the basis of land use has been established. Official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment parameters are in place. What comes next forward to council will be the draft plan of subdivision. That is a council approval process that will come forward to you guys through planning committee. And that will contain the very specific details about how the lots are going to be divided, roads, infrastructure, and the conditions that go along with that. Not something we would typically see in this part of town. You know, there are other districts that are more used to plans of subdivision because of how the city has grown, but that is the next step in that process. Council also does have the ability to bump up final plan approval process for a plan of subdivision for decision making as well. And then after that, the council process, unless there are amendments to either the official plan, the zoning bylaw, or the plan of subdivision, won't come back to you.
Councillor Jimmy Hassan plainly asked staff what power council holds in this situation.
And it seems to me from my colleague's question and the resident who has concern about this particular project that everyone want to stop that project, not as happen. We asked question about the environment and, you know, about the trees and the wetland and everything else. And city has spent $700,000+, and we lost that case. Staff has invested a lot of time and efforts to bring the information to the council and to the public consultation. My question is, at the end of the day, the developer has been rewarded what he wants to do. What is in hands of this council? What is in our power to achieve what we asking, all the question we asking you today? Is anything still in our hand? We can stop him not to do that project or make the changes what the council or the concerned resident want? Or we just wasting our time? What it seems to be, we are powerless. We just can ask, other than we can delay his project, what else we can achieve?
As Councillor Hassan mentioned, the city spent more than $730,000 to defend Council's 2022 decision at the OLT, and city staff estimate the developer spent just as much, if not more. City staff confirm that Council has the authority to reject or propose amendments to future applications. However, if Council does refuse, the developer could once again appeal to the OLT.
He will go back to the court again, and then he might win again. So what we're sitting here, what we're talking about, is all just wasting time and money.
City staff are in discussions with the developer to determine next steps for the project. Patry received an exemption from the city's tree bylaw for the tannery site in 2019, meaning that tree clearing could technically begin at any time. At their meeting last week, council unanimously passed a motion changing the way financial and crime reports from Kingston Police are delivered. The motion was introduced by Councillor Gregory Ridge, who explained that the changes are meant to maintain accountability while cutting down on unnecessary costs.
Well, the original purpose of this motion was to add additional financial accountability due to the Kingston Police repeatedly going over budget. Last year, after significant efforts and new financial staff leadership, they finally come in under their budget for the fiscal year. While I, and I'm sure several other councillors, still have concerns about financial stewardship, they can be addressed at council when Kingston Police leadership present, both in the second and fourth quarters.
Ridge dove into exactly what the motion entails.
This motion does very simply three things. It takes the previous motion that had the requirement for quarterly financial reports with briefings, and it changes that motion so that we would be receiving reports every quarter. So that would not change as in the actual documents, but that the briefings would only be after quarter two and quarter four. In addition to this, we would be adding reported crime statistics per electoral district as per the format of that's reported to for Kingston Police Services Board.
Currently, Kingston Police provide in-person presentations four times a year, but Ridge noted that these presentations can have unintended costs.
The presentations also inadvertently cause or can cause increased costs for Kingston Police administration in overtime, specifically when they're presenting at 11:35 p.m. as per the previous meeting. While it may not be apparent to people watching online or even in the council chambers, the presentations require all senior administration and some administrative support from Kingston Police, including civilian employees, to be on hand and assisting in answering the questions from council. As their presentations can be later, this can inadvertently create additional costs. So this is kind of finding a way to balance that consideration.
The addition of crime statistics in these reports, Ridge said, will give councillors better insight into community safety.
The reporting of crime statistics may help councillors reviewing the information to see a larger strategic picture on where issues around types of crimes and community safety issues are occurring and with what frequency. This can help inform additional decision-making and also give councillors more information with which to inform constituents.
Council will now receive semi-annual briefings in June and December, while all four quarterly reports will continue to be forwarded through the city clerk's office. A Kingston area minerals mine is putting southeastern Ontario on the map in the fight against climate change. Canadian wollastonite, located in Seelies Bay, has signed a 3-year agreement with UK-based company Undue Carbon to supply nearly 500,000 tons of rock for one of the largest carbon removal projects in the world. I spoke with Canadian wollastonite president Bob Vasily about the science, the scale, and what this means for Kingston and beyond. Wollastonite is a mineral not many people have heard of, but according to Vasily, it could play a huge role in tackling carbon emissions while also helping Ontario's farmers.
We supply wollastonite, which is a primary mineral, and most people don't know what it is, but it's a calcium silicate. We supply it into a number of industrial applications, into steel manufacturing, into some green cements. We've been working a lot as a soil amendment, but recently we've done a fair bit of research, which is very compelling now, as a soil amendment for farms, which has the main benefit of capturing atmospheric carbon and bringing it down and locking it away. But it also has agronomical value to the farmer. So it encourages farmers to participate in this carbon removal cycle which is important to everybody.
The cycle is an accelerated version of what the Earth has already done for billions of years, enhanced rock weathering.
The process is a natural process. The Earth has been doing this for billions of years. It's always taking place. And so the process of rain picking up carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, reacting with silicate rocks, and those silicate rocks permanently locking that carbon away, is how the Earth has regulated itself since it cooled, originally cooled. The process here, we're accelerating it. It's called enhanced rock weathering because we're crushing those silicate rocks down to a fairly small particle size, and that increases the reactive surface area. And then we're putting it into field conditions, which again really promote the breakdown and the weathering of these materials. So instead of a process that takes thousands of years, we're quite literally accelerating it to taking 1, 2, and 3 years for this weathering process. It's relatively new in that the real emphasis of how important the need is to capture carbon that's already in the atmosphere and bring it back out really has developed. There's all kinds of technical solutions for it. This really started to take off. We started working in 2015 on it with the University of Guelph. It really, really started for us to take off in 2020 with a number of publications with some of our other university partners, Yale University being maybe one of the biggest ones. And it's catching on because it's a real practical, simple solution. It involves farmers. It involves large swaths of land. It's sustainable in that it's helping the crops also weather, survive biotic, abiotic stresses a lot better, which is what, climate change is doing to farms. So the crops are managing the stress better because of the silicon that's releasing. It's employing, farmers and farmland, which otherwise wouldn't be involved. And it's also reducing the amount of other inputs, like chemical inputs and things like that, into these farmlands. So it's just a natural win. It's far less costly than technical solutions. So there are some other large projects, billion-dollar projects to capture carbon that removes CO2 directly from the air and pumps it into, concentrates it and pumps it into rock formations deep under the earth. There's some ocean methods, but this is by far the simplest, most cost-effective, with the greatest all-around good for society and for the planet.
Canadian Wollastonite has been working with universities since 2015 to study the process, but in recent years, it's caught the attention of international partners. Vasily explains how Undo Carbon got involved and how this new project will be scaling up their carbon removal operations.
We first started working with Undo in early 2023, and they had reached out to us with some, and we had reached out to them on some publications and some work we were doing with University of Guelph and Yale University and so on carbon removal. They were very interested. They were working with the mineral called basalt mainly, which is very prevalent. We demonstrated that the wollastonite actually, it's almost an order of magnitude 10 times faster in its weathering and its reactivity. And since they were trying to develop some geochemical models to prove and to demonstrate the actual carbon sequestration that's occurring, that was very attractive to them. So we started off with a pilot project of about, I think, 5,000 tons of material. It went really well. They put it into some farm field applications as well as some trial plots. They were getting strong signals. They were getting good signals in terms of weathering and rates, which they weren't getting, it was taking years to get in other minerals. So they wanted to scale that up. We agreed. So we scaled it up in 2024. And we spread a total of, I think, 35,000 tons of material on farm fields. That was a real success, both with them and their science team, but also with a number of companies that were sponsoring them to help develop the science, the enhanced rock weathering science. This contract is a real fairly significant extension. This contract is for 450,000 tons over a 3-year period. So it's, as you can sort of see, you know, 535, 450, it's a scaling. And it's really important because this is going to demonstrate for them and also for the world, because this would be, we believe this is the second largest demonstration of its kind for permanent carbon capture in the world. And it happens to be happening here in Kingston and in Eastern Ontario. But this is going to demonstrate the scalability of the science. And once this is completed, one of UNDU's plans is then to start incorporating other mineral sources, other rock types like basalts and olivines and so on, into their models, and then going around and essentially get operations like us involved with carbon removal on a global scale in every country in the world. So they pitched that in a competition, an XPRIZE competition, which was a global $100 million prize competition. And they came in fourth in the world out of, and I think if I recall, the original was 3,200 teams, universities, companies from around the world. So this humble project in Eastern Ontario is now getting some world recognition. And this particular offtake is really important. I think it's going to really set the pace for large-scale carbon removal going forward.
For farmers, wollastonite is provided free of charge and the mineral improves soil quality. This project will allow the program to add an additional 2,000 farms to the program.
We're providing the wollastonite at no cost to the farmer. That's being subsidized through the program and through the main purchasers who are trying to advance the science. So that's Microsoft and Google and Stripe and some of these other, you know, very large companies. The farmer's receiving the wollastonite at no cost. They're spreading. We're covering the cost of spreading or physically spreading it for them. And there's all kinds of agronomical benefits that the wollastonite's bringing to the crops that they're seeing right away. The farmers just simply continue the farming operations as they normally would. So normally farmers would bring in lime and put lime on fields in order to manage the pH so that they, you know, for their crops and for their fertilizers. By using wollastonite, first of all, putting lime on farmlands, particularly in our area, gives off CO2. So that removes their emissions, and now they're capturing, you know, more than 50% weight of CO2 through this process. So it's really surprisingly simple. It's allowing them to decrease their inputs, so they don't have to, for instance, buy lime, and so there's cost to the lime and cost to spreading. So it's directly saving the farmer, which is symbiotic, because without the farmer's land, we wouldn't be able to do this. So it has to be a win-win for both the farmer and you know, the large corporations that are sponsoring this. And so that's essentially the model and how we see it rolling forward going into the future.
The city of Kingston was the first municipality to step in, subsidizing hauling costs for farmers. And Vasily says it's already sparking interest in other municipalities.
So Kingston is subsidizing haulage rates for farmers, because that's the only cost to the farmer. So they're helping the farmer integrate wollastonite into their operations. It's the first program of its type that we think of in Canada, like a municipal contribution to, you know, carbon removal at this scale, like a private carbon removal. It's significant because it's drawing adoption, a lot of adoption from the Kingston farmers. But what it's really doing is it started the conversations now with other municipalities. So we actually have, you know, Ottawa region coming down to talk about the exact same program. We have Association of Municipalities in Eastern Ontario starting to talk about this as a way for them to promote and meet their own sort of carbon objectives, carbon removal or carbon sequestration targets.
Vasily shared some of the key objectives over the next 3 years.
So certainly achieving the objectives of spreading 450,000 tons, for UNDU, demonstrating the measured objectives of capturing, you know, plus 200,000 tons of atmospheric carbon permanently. Um, and, And so if I can give you an equivalent of that, if you were to think of trees, like planting trees, which is, people think of that in terms of carbon removal, that's the equivalent of us planting 6 million trees in the next 3 years. So it's a huge amount. The big difference, and I don't like to use trees too often, because the tree will capture carbon for the life of the tree. And then when it dies, the carbon is re-released. So this would be like planting 6 million trees of carbon capture, but the tree never dies. It lives forever. And so this is essentially what's taking place with the type of carbon capture that the farmers are participating in.
The global scientific community is also taking notice. Last spring, Undo was named one of four global winners of the $100 million XPRIZE carbon removal competition for its work in Eastern Ontario. Vasily says this project could become a blueprint worldwide.
After this trial, or basically this project, I think Undo will have the data they need to be able to model other mineral sources, which otherwise, like, it might take them 10 years normally. They'll get those geochemical models completed in the next 2 to 3. And then they'll be able to accurately measure carbon removal through silicate or enhanced rock weathering. And I know their goal is to then, find thousands of companies like mine and get them involved so that it becomes a truly scalable global solution.
Once again, that was Canadian Wollastonite President Bob Vasily speaking about a landmark carbon removal initiative incoming for southeastern Ontario. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. If you're looking to get out tonight, you can see Divine Devil's Drag Show featuring Sigourney Beaver and more local Kingston drag at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 560. Show begins at 8:30 p.m. and is $45 online, $55 at the door. Also tonight at the Buckle, karaoke from 9 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. Tomorrow on September 27th, visit the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and find a range of local crafts and locally sourced agriculture. There are often lawn games, music, and free activities, making it the perfect place for any age group. This market is also a great opportunity to engage with your community. The market at Wolf Island Commons runs every Saturday until October 11th from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. across the street from the hotel at the waterfront. Vibrant Voices is a community song circle event for 2S LGBTQIA+ community and allies, and is open to teens and adults. This event takes place at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library Central Branch from 1 to 3 p.m. On Sunday, September 28th, join CFRC 101.9 FM at 9:30 a.m. for another engaging Airwave YGK workshop, brought to our community through the generous support of the Kingston Arts Council, the City of Kingston, the Kingston Music Office, and the Broom Factory. This event is free to attend. The workshop held at the Broom Factory, 305 Rideau Street, will be led by Rob Bailey, co-owner of Kingston Soundworks and legendary local sound technician. Rob will facilitate this hands-on workshop for young and emerging musicians who are just starting out playing gigs. Come learn soundboard tech, terminology, troubleshooting, communications, equipment setup, and soundcheck basics with this local industry pro. After the workshop, attendees are welcome to stick around for soundcheck for Birdbone Theatre, Foster, Shane Sadak, and the Oscar Evans Group playing a matinee concert at 1:30. You can register for this free workshop and get concert tickets at cfrc.ca. Have a concert or event you'd like to add to our online and on-air concert and events calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca, and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Coming up next, for CFRC's afternoon lineup at noon, we have Democracy Now! Syndicated news with Amy Goodman. At 1 p.m., we dive into some new music fresh from the mail on This Just In, hosted by our music library manager, Chancellor. At 2 p.m., we have Whiplash, Anything and Everything with DJ LFN. At 3 p.m., Melodies of Myth, hosted by Seymour Carr, blending mini-stories with the rich sounds of Indian classical and Western music.
At 3:30 p.m., we have the final episode of Viewpoints, independent Canadian news featuring fellow Local Journalism Initiative reporters. Be sure to stay tuned for all of these programs and so much more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Join CFRC on September 28th at the Broom Factory at 9:30 a.m. for our Airwave YGK Soundtech Workshop. Rob Bailey of Kingston Soundworks will facilitate this hands-on workshop.